Mini episode 682 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs, consulting, and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode 682 of the FDH Lounge. Your favorite football talkers in the universe, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, coming here to break down Super Bowl 50 for you, live and in living color, as it were, as Kyle is over here at the Casa de Riccio to break this one down. It's good to have you back over here at the place, Kyle, and looking forward to breaking down this unique matchup, the 50th Super Bowl with you.
Not the Super Bowl matchup I was thinking.
Me neither.
Not this. And what's unique about it is that I believe this is the third year in a row we will have the top seed from each conference Super Bowl, correct?
That is right.
Denver, Seattle 3 years ago, or 2 years ago. New England, Seattle last year, and now we have Denver, Carolina.
Yeah.
It's interesting in that when the playoffs started, I had made the case that, particularly on the AFC side with Denver, we were looking at a historically weak number one seed.
Yes.
When you look at their point differential, you had to go all the way back to 1985 to find a number one seed that had a point differential lower than Denver, who I believe was either plus 59 or plus 56.
They had an expected record of 9.7 to 6.3.
Yeah, yeah. So they outperformed by over two wins, like two, that's 2.3, sorry, as
right.
I throw a chicken wing there at the bookshelf. And, you know, there had only been since the year 2000 two top seeds that had a point differential below plus 100.
Right.
Neither of those won the Super Bowl. But here we are, Denver got there. Give them credit. They do have a very good defense, not just very good. That's underselling things. They have the best defense in the league, and that was enough to take care of a Pittsburgh team which was down a couple key players. And then, you know, in something I should have seen coming last week, and by the way, thank you, pardon me, 2 weeks ago it was now, thank you for manning the show as I
sure
had something come up that is rather unpleasant and I wouldn't wish on anybody, quite frankly. You know, they took care of New England, something I should have seen coming, like I said, in that all the money was on the Patriots going into that game. They were drawing all the money, and you know my philosophy, the public's wrong more often than not. Sure enough, they were big time there. The books cleaned up with Denver. So here they are, two wins at home.
Yeah.
Close. I believe they are now 13-3 in games decided by 7 points or less this year. That's astounding.
Yeah.
There is no doubt in my mind this team will regress next year, severely so.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they can't win the Super Bowl. Now, on the NFC side, I think what had a lot of people trepidatious with Carolina is the draw they had in the divisional round.
Right.
With Seattle. But, if I take you back to that game, they destroyed Seattle in the first half. A lot of things went their way, and then Seattle was able to work its way back into the game in the second half, but it was too little too late. And then Carolina really just, there's no other way to put it, turned in flat out one of the most impressive performances we have seen in this entire NFL season, in just destroying Arizona in the NFC Championship game. Again, I didn't get to watch a lot of the game, but I didn't need to. It was an ass-whipping of epic proportions. I went back and looked at it after the fact. Live is when I missed it. It to beat a team, because Arizona, a team that, quite frankly, I had questioned the two previous years.
Right.
Arizona was a very legitimate team this year, and Carolina thumped them badly. So, is the, maybe from you, maybe from me, the tendency is, these teams don't belong, they're lucky to be here. Denver, yes, I think there's some luck with them with that record in close games. Carolina, though, yes, there is the matter of the regular season schedule, which was kind of weak. I believe you graded it as the weakest in the league.
In the league, and that's where I've had my question
about
that.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, there was nothing you can question about what they did two Sundays ago to Arizona.
I want to ask you something about this. And before we get into the nitty-gritty of the game, we're going to take a step backward, but I want to follow where you're going with these opening thoughts here. Let me ask you this, because I have a theory when it comes to Carolina on that. And that is, again, I pointed out on the FDH index here and looking at strength of schedule, the weakest schedule in the league. The fact that both playoff games were blowouts where early on they were more or less over with. You're playing a lot more loose and free and easy when the game is out of hand. I wonder how that prepares them for a Super Bowl against a defense that probably can't permit this. In other words, I've been calling them Team Glass Jaw for a while. I still wonder in a closer game what that's going to be like. And, oh, by the way, Gary Kubiak's first year as head coach with that close record, who's he a lot like as far as opening up a chapter as a head coach in close games? Who's he like? Hint. Look across the field.
Ron Rivera, yeah.
Yes.
Well, no, actually,
that's how Ron Rivera started his career.
No.
Weren't they great in close games?
No, they were hideous.
Oh, my bad.
They were hideous. It's the complete opposite. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That's why you didn't get it.
Yeah, they were awful.
I had it backwards.
They were the first.
I was so proud of myself, and I was wrong.
The first 2 years, they were terrible in close games.
No, you're right. You're right.
And
it was like
Rivera,
2-14 or something.
Yeah, Rivera with his job against the wall.
That's when he turned into Riverboat Ron, yeah.
I call it analytical Ron because they're actually not gambling decisions. They're smart decisions.
Okay.
Realized that he had a 6'6" quarterback who more often than not would get it on 4th-and-1.
Right.
By the way, I kind of wished it was New England and Carolina here because then we could have a great breakdown of the quarterback sneak because no one's better at that than Brady and Newton.
Right.
But he changed his style to his credit, you know, got a little, by NFL coaching standards, riskier, riverboat, whatever. And, you know, they tend to do a lot better in close games. I mean, Carolina had a phenomenal record in close games this year. I believe it was, I can bring out my chart, but I think it was like 7-1, 8-1.
That's right.
You know, that's not even including the that's including the Seattle game. So we have two teams that had a lot of success in close games this year. And with Carolina, when you're 15-1, you obviously expect they're going to have a good record in close games.
Well, you talked about not seeing it coming for a couple of different ways and maybe where we should have. And I'm going to jump on that a little bit with Denver as well last week because I was convinced that New England was going to win soundly. But this is a thing. And again, I've been saying in recent weeks, the Denver defense, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, they're the best in the league, but where do they rate historically? I'll still put them toward the back of the tier, but I think they're on the first tier all time. Now, that might be the 10th or the 12th best defense ever, but I mean, they're on the top tier. I'm a believer, and here's the thing with New England. I should have known this. A defense that good, because We fool ourselves here with all this Belichick genius crap and everything like that.
Again, he's a very good coach.
Very successful. But here's the thing. Oh, it doesn't matter that they can't run the ball. Yes, it does. When you're running against a defense, when you're going against a defense as good as them and you have no running game to take the steam off, then you're going to see Tom Brady getting hit 20 times, the most that any quarterback got hit in the league all season long. That's something I should have seen coming but didn't.
Going to your point about Denver's defense, where does it place historically? Football Outsiders did a piece ranking them in the DVOA era, which only goes back to 1989 as of right now. So, you know, historical defenses.
Let me guess. I'm going to say 85
Bears. Doesn't fit fourth.
Fourth. Oh, higher than I thought.
89.
Okay.
And all the defenses are actually fairly recent defenses, believe it or not. The only three to rate higher than Denver, and this is interesting.
Got to be the 2013 Seahawks.
They were number three.
Mm-hmm.
The 2008 Steelers.
Whoa, there's a name you don't hear very much.
And then the 2002 Bucks were number one.
No 20,000 Ravens here.
Number five.
Oh, okay.
20,000, I believe 2,000.
Well, 2,000, yes. Yeah.
Yes, they were number five. That surprised me they weren't that higher. They were number one, I believe, against the run of all time. You couldn't run the ball on that team. Apparently, is this true? They allowed 976 yards rushing that year?
That seems hard to believe, but okay.
It is true. I'm looking at it right now. Wow. They allowed 9. That's an all-time record for a non-strike season, 2.7 yards per carry.
That's pretty amazing right there.
But apparently against the pass, they were a little so-so that year. So interesting. The other four of those top five all won the Super Bowl, oh, by the way. So in this era where we've become so infatuated with offenses, maybe defense wins championships still holds water. It certainly happened with that Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I think the question mark in people's mind, and I know you want to get historical on us.
Sure.
In a moment, is Denver's offense is so bad that could it cost this top-rated defense, you know, a chance to carry it to the Super Bowl?
It could. And, oh, by the way, and I've been saying from the earliest days of the FDH Lounge, I've been beating the drum that the Hall of Fame should include coordinators. By those standards, Wade Phillips is a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator.
Wade Phillips is a great great defensive
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
He's not a good head coach.
No.
That.
But you don't put him in the Hall of Fame as a head coach. You do it as a defensive coordinator.
Everywhere he's been,
right.
He has had a great defense.
Yeah, and did it again. In terms of, I'm glad you're here for this in person because I want to see your face as I trot out some of these historical nuggets before we get into the tail of the tape and we get back into the nitty-gritty of the thing. Here's just some goofier stuff here. Super Bowl notes and oddities. This Super Bowl marks the first time that each team's most recent appearance was a loss to one of the two teams from the previous year. Denver lost to Seattle in Super Bowl 48. Carolina lost to New England in Super Bowl 38. Ooh. So there's that. Likewise, there has never been a Super Bowl with a team, Denver, who qualified for the Super Bowl by beating the team, New England, who took out their opponent, Carolina, in their most recent Super Bowl. First time ever for that.
Wow.
Denver has tied Carolina and Pittsburgh with eight. New England and Pittsburgh with eight Super Bowl appearances out of the AFC. Half of their appearances have now come in California Super Bowls, with them being 1-2 in the Golden State previously. No team has played four Super Bowls in one state before. The closest teams to this mark are New England, 2-1 in Super Bowls contested in New Orleans, and you've got Dallas. They are 0-3 in Super Bowls contested in Florida. The only previous here's a mark against Denver for Sunday. The only previous Super Bowl on a February 7th featured Peyton Manning's first Super Bowl loss, 31-17 to New Orleans in Super Bowl 44 in 2010. Denver's
closer game than the final score showed. That remember there was that pick six
that's
when
right.
Indy was driving.
Absolutely, Denver is doing something that's been done for the eighth time and something they've done before, returning to the Super Bowl after a year away. Such teams are 3-4, but Denver and Minnesota are the only two teams to lose the Super Bowl and make it back 2 years later, and both squads lost when they came back again. Carolina has become the fifth team this decade to reach the Super Bowl after more than a decade away. So the results are mixed. Denver lost Super Bowl 48. Baltimore beat San Francisco in Super Bowl 47 with two such teams. Green Bay beat Pittsburgh in Super Bowl 45. 12 different teams have represented the NFC in Super Bowls in the 21st century. Only Carolina, Seattle, the New York Giants, and the former St. Louis Rams have had repeat appearances. Only 7 teams have represented the AFC, and out of those, only Oakland and Tennessee have not had repeat appearances. Now, we all remember the NFC streak of 13 consecutive Super Bowls from the 80s into the 90s. Then AFC took 9 of the next 12. The latest streak is that the NFC has won 4 of the last 6. Here's a real bizarre one. Call it the curse of 15-1 or better. The Panthers have become the seventh team in this club. The last four have failed to win the Super Bowl. Of those teams, all but the 2007 Patriots were 15-1 in the regular season. Super Bowl winners were the first two. It was the 1984 49ers and the 1985 Bears. You've got the Pats, who lost in the Super Bowl in 2000, from the 2007 season, the 98 Vikings, 2004 Steelers, and 2011 Packers. They didn't even make it there. They lost in the division round.
Nor did that Vikings team. They lost the NFC Championship on the Gary Anderson gag kick.
Yeah, thanks for jinxing them, Fox, with your stupid graphic there. You had mentioned about both number one seeds in the Super Bowl, third consecutive year. Surprisingly rare. Out of the first 47 Super Bowls, it only happened 9 times. So we're on a weird run here.
Although in the 70s, didn't they do something weird, like home field advantage, like on some rotating
It was
thing?
Rotating, and because
your number one seed.
My fish had to go to Pittsburgh to win in 1972 for that.
It was a good year for you.
Yeah. The last Super Bowl to be played in the West Coast also featured an AFC West, NFC South battle. Super Bowl 37, the Chucky Bowl in San Diego, where Tampa Bay blew out Oakland 48-21. This Super Bowl has not only a battle of former number one picks, Manning in 1998, Newton in 2011, but the top two picks from 2011, Newton and Von Miller. And you have the third consecutive new school, old school Super Bowl, Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Peyton Manning, Cam Newton. And I always like to see if these cities have any real sports history. No real intersection between Denver and Charlotte in any sport to speak of. So that's...
No, because Charlotte's a relatively new pro sports market.
Yep. I mean, it's not exactly New York, Boston here, folks. This is a blank slate.
Yeah.
They're gonna carve it out on Sunday.
No Canes Avs for us here? No Canes Avs? How are the Canes and the Avs doing?
I'll give you some commonality. My Detroit Red Wings beat the ass of the Avs in 2002 to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals and beat the Carolina Hurricanes in the Stanley Cup Finals. There you go. I supplied it with my Detroit Red Wings. How about that? On the spot.
And I was the one who brought up Canes Avs.
You made me think of it on the spot.
Very good.
The thing of it is, too, and I got some tail of the tape stuff as well here, just in terms of numbers. Well, you talked about Denver and the expected record here. Carolina, of course, led the league in point differential, 192, but their Pythagorean record would have been 12.1 to 3.9. So they overperformed it as well, even with leading the league.
When you're 15-1, the point differential that you need to match that is pretty rarefied air.
That's right.
There are very few teams that have a win expectancy of 15.
That's
right. In the history of this league.
In terms of the power rankings, final FDH power rankings, Carolina was 1, Denver 6. Strength of schedule, talked about this already. Carolina 32, Denver 9.
I had Denver even lower. I had a 10.
Okay.
Coming into the playoffs.
Okay. On the impressiveness of victories index, which is half victories and half who you beat, Carolina 11th, just on the strength of winning 15 games and nothing else. Denver was 2nd. Offensively, points scored, Carolina 1st, Denver 19th. Offensive yards, this is where it's a little closer. Carolina 11th, Denver 16th. In passing yards, Carolina only 24th, Denver 14th. On rushing yards, Carolina 2nd, Denver 17th. But I did a little experiment here. I did a thing because I thought to myself, you would think anecdotally, Denver's running game has been a lot better recently. I just took all their performances week 11 onward. They would have been 4th in the league if you did that. So the 17th doesn't really reflect where they are now. Defensively, pretty close. 6th for Carolina in points allowed, 4th for Denver. 6th for Carolina in yards allowed, 1st for Denver. Carolina was 11th in passing yards allowed. Denver was 1st. In terms of rushing yards, Carolina 4th, and Denver was 3rd. So you look at Denver being 3rd in rushing yards allowed, Carolina 2nd in rushing yards gained. That's your biggest strength-on-strength matchup that we have here. Additionally, third down conversions, Carolina 42.4. They know how to keep these drives going. Denver 32.5% on defense. That's another strength-v-strength area right there. And time of possession. This is something that can be a little bit bigger than you would think. I mean, a minute and a half is a pretty decent bulk here as far as differential. 32.03 for Carolina offensively. Denver 30.30. So you got,
Of possession can be a little overrated, though.
It can be. It definitely
Even
can
Phil
be.
Even Phil Simms has caught on to that.
Well, yeah, that's true. And,
God, is this game on? This game's on CBS.
It is on CBS. You gotta sit through that. So. Those are just the statistics as they relate to the game and not just the kind of goofiness of it. But the thing
good stuff.
That thank you. The thing that I'm seeing here, I mean, in terms of when you're getting to the two quarterbacks, one of the things that I think is going to be the biggest key here is that Denver has a better secondary than Carolina, especially when you look at the Panthers' injury.
The second cornerback spot is a
yeah.
disaster it, for it, Carolina. You thought Arizona would be able to take advantage of it with its deep receiving corps.
Yeah.
I
thought they would. It's a turnstile right now. Josh Norman and a kind of bleak situation there.
Courtland Finnegan's drawn a paycheck, for Christ's sake.
Well, exactly. So it's one of these things where Cam Newton is matched against the much tougher secondary. Peyton Manning is just matched against the secondary that's going to give him trouble because most secondaries do at this point. So to me,
there's no question who the better quarterback is coming into this matchup.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyone who wants to make the argument that it's close is a fool.
Well, and like this is something that we really haven't seen before in sports, I don't think, especially at the Super Bowl. And this is something you're not going to hear a lot on Sunday because the NFL is in the business of cheerleading their product. So they're not going to talk about, imagine if Johnny Unitas at the end of his run was in a Super Bowl or Joe Namath or whatever. We remember how badly some of these guys went out in the game. Peyton Manning has been carried to the Super Bowl by this defense. And what's interesting is that, I mean, he is, of course, Peyton Manning in the history books. But when you look at this game, what this bears the most similarity to is Trent Dilfer getting carried there by the Baltimore Ravens. Peyton Manning, unlike Trent Dilfer, was about 1-2 underwater this season in terms of touchdown to interception ratio. Peyton Manning, arguably, at least not arguably by that metric, but arguably overall, a bigger anchor on his defense than Trent Dilfer was in 2000. So think about that. I'll take it a step further. Yeah.
What did you have? What was Denver's win expectancy? 9.7?
9.7, brother.
So they won 12, so it's a difference of 2.3.
Yeah.
You know what that's reminiscent of?
What?
Everybody's favorite Denver Broncos team.
Which one?
The Tim Tebow-led version.
Oh.
That win expectancy. Because that team won 8 games in the regular season, and I think their win expectancy was like 5-something.
Right.
So it's really close.
Right.
Actually, now, this team's better.
Right.
Than that one was, obviously, but the difference in terms of overachieving is relatively the same. So I just wanted to point that
out.
Okay,
interesting. Something I've thrown out on the show in the last couple weeks,
Not to compare Peyton Manning to Tim Tebow.
No.
Although
but I mean,
I'll say this.
Yeah.
John Elway better have something in his bag of tricks to avoid the potential year plus one regression that's likely to hit next year. I don't think Brock Osweiler's the answer. Obviously, he saw the writing on the wall with Tebow. He signs peak Peyton Manning, and they had set all those records that year to offset any potential regression that should hit.
That's it, yeah.
I don't think, you know, again, this
there's
is
no going back to the
this
well.
This is a different podcast for a different day.
Yeah.
I don't think Brock Osweiler, or if Peyton for someone for seen reason decides to actually come back next year, I don't think they're going to be able to avoid the inevitable regression.
Let me ask you this. Because this is one of the fascinating questions in my mind. I think it's going to be a relatively tight game just because of the defense.
Yeah.
I envision a real field position battle here.
And but, Denver, most of their scoring
drives
in their two postseason games have been a result of good field position.
Right.
They have not really driven the length of the field all that much.
But here's the interesting thing, and I go back to, you know, and this is where the database in my head makes things kind of fun for me. One of the classic examples I can think of is where a team got up on another team, and it wasn't a blowout, but you knew it was over, was the 2003 NFC Championship when the Panthers, remember, it was like 14-3 on the Eagles, and you knew the Eagles couldn't come back. It was like the third quarter. It was like, this one's over. Well, I remember going to Subway with my buddy. I'm like, this one's over. Let's go get something to eat because you knew they couldn't come back. If Carolina gets up 10-13 points, it's probably over.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Here's the thing. What's the threshold short of a blowout if there is one? Is it 17? Is it 20? At what point does Kerry Kubiak have the balls to go to Osweiler of, like, we got to do something?
Wow.
What's the threshold short of a blowout? I mean, if it's 42-0, then of course he does.
I guess it
But
it depends.
Is it plausible? Is it plausible we get the relief pitcher?
Sure it is. It depends what Peyton's role in that blowout is.
Okay.
If he's thrown a pick six, then obviously the chance of Kubiak looking to the bench is higher. If it's a case that Newton hits some big plays or Carolina does something on special teams, then it's less likely.
Well, here's the thing. Through the first two games of the playoffs, what we've seen of Manning, you know, after he kind of got dusted off there towards the end of the San Diego game, one of the things in my mind that has been kind of striking here, because we keep hearing about, and it's true, I mean, the football IQ of this guy who's like off the charts, although to be honest with you, that mind and that body is sort of bringing together the thought of Stephen Hawking right about now.
Oh, no,
but,
come on.
Well,
that's uncalled for. And
but here's the thing. His accuracy is not good. When he's missing passes,
no, it's not.
Even intermediate passes,
oh, he's been really
he's
bad.
Missing by a lot.
He's
so
been, statistically, he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league this
year. Right, right, right. His accuracy, but I'm saying even recently here, even with them winning these big games, his accuracy has been piss poor. He can't bring you back from 2 touchdowns or 17 points down or whatever. Gary Kubiak risks looking like a major heel to make the move at that point. And yet, if you're there And you owe it to a 53-man roster, all of whom is fighting for this. No one man is bigger than
terrible,
the team.
You've got to pull him. You have to pull him.
Let's say he's like, 5 for 14, 62 yards, 2 interceptions.
You pull him.
Okay, all right. Even if it's not a blowout, and theoretically Peyton could bring them back.
If it's still a one-score game with those numbers, they probably keep him in. If they're down multiple scores in the second half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. The other thing, too, I want to correct the record on something I surmised on the show in recent weeks. Because I said, and this was just anecdotal, and this is one of those times when anecdotal proves to be wrong, of where I was looking at it like, okay, people are talking like Denver defense, one of the great ones all time. And I was sitting here going, anecdotally, it seems to me they were a bit stronger in the first half of the season as opposed to the second half of the season. I just looked at games where they have kept opponents below 300 total yards and below 20 points, and there was nothing that indicated they were stronger in the first half than the second half.
Other
so
than,
I'm just correcting myself.
Well,
I mean, there was the straight performance
here
and there.
There's the two Steelers games. Ben Roethlisberger is the only quarterback to throw for 300 yards against his defense. He did
right.
it twice.
Right.
And both those games were in the second half of the year.
Right.
But other than that, one has cracked this nut.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think that they did hold Pittsburgh to, 16 points, though?
Yeah, right.
Despite
right about
all those
there.
Yards.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was 16 points. So
that's the damnedest thing when this defense.
Pittsburgh's the only one to go for. Pittsburgh, I believe, is the only team to score 30 on them. Is that true? Let me take a look here.
I believe so.
Denver,
yeah.
That it was 31-24 that game that they lost. I don't think they've lost, or 34-27.
Right.
It was. Other than that, the most points they scored. They did give up 29 to Kansas City. That was the game that sent Manning packing. Remember, he threw,
right.
I believe, like, at least one pick six. He threw a ton of interceptions.
He did.
And put his team in terrible position.
Right.
But, yeah, other than those two games, they gave up more than 24 just one other time. They gave up 27 in an upset loss to the Colts.
And that's the thing, too. You look at the playoff game against Pittsburgh. One of the things that really makes them even more dangerous is that even on an off day like that was an off day by their standards, no question about it, they're still playing bend but don't break. It's not a matter of you're
they
giving up a bunch
out,
of touchdowns.
It's interesting that they've been outgained in both playoff games and
yeah.
won. That's not a good sign.
Well, and,
to
and,
win. Well, if this is the regular season,
right.
It's interesting. I usually look to play against teams that have won but have been outgained in consecutive games. Now, the interesting thing here with Denver is public perception.
Right.
It's so much against him. It was so much against him last week. It's so much against him here. We are on a pace, Rick, just to give you an update. We're recording this, what day is this, Monday?
Monday.
So there's still 6 days before the game, so a lot can change.
Yep.
But as of right now, from a betting perspective, the percentages of handle on each team is expected to be an all-time discrepancy. Right now, let me look, I think it's about 75% of all wagers are on Carolina. That's unbelievable.
Probably the entire 25% is coming from the state of Colorado.
But, I mean, or it's just, maybe Denver money. I mean, the Denver money showed up late, very late last week.
Yeah.
A few books did have to go to 3.5 against New England. Those were gobbled up very quickly, and it turned out the points were not even necessary. So from that perspective, I would be very nervous. And it's, a little bit of a spoiler. It's going to kind of form the basis of where I'm going here with my actual pick. But we are at a historical discrepancy in terms of betting percentages on the two teams.
Well, and to back up, the number opened to 3.5 and has gone to 6. So there's been a decent spike thus far. And that is huge. There's no question about that. But it's one of these things where, again, I think people are looking at a lot of the same things here, not least of which, again, the real weakness of Peyton Manning and the fact that, again, he's going to be facing a defense that is significantly stronger than what he's faced in the playoffs thus far. All due respect to New England, but the Carolina defense is still stiffer, even with, again, that second cornerback spot, which post-injury has been a real issue there. This Carolina defense, and this is one of these things, too. You talk about guys who, when they make it to the big stage, have a chance to get a name that is on a level with what their ability is. And Luke Kuechly is one of those first guys that comes to mind, because this guy's been one of the best inside linebackers in the league for the last couple of years, if not the best. And a lot of it starts with him. But then you go to Josh Norman, a lot of the other guys that they have up front here. This defensive front, and it's no wonder that, again, Sean McDermott has been getting so many head coaching interviews here. And, again, I think is just the latest victim of guys who are going to have a hard time getting hired, because you have to wait till, in this case, the Super Bowl's done. But the job of this they've done with the defense in Carolina this year has just been amazing.
Yes, and just to update, the betting percentage is exact. Carolina 74-26, so it's
okay.
Not quite 75. I will say there have only been since 03, mm-hmm. This is according to Sports Insights, I'm completely lifting it from them,
okay.
Their database. Since 03, there have only been six teams to ever receive less than 30% of total bets in the playoffs.
Okay.
Those teams are 4-2 against the spread, including Denver in the AFC Championship over New England.
Interesting. Well, what I want
none of them are a Super Bowl, I'd like to point out.
Okay.
None of them are a Super Bowl.
Oh, that is interesting.
So Denver right now is on pace, at least since 03, when we have all the information, to be the least bet Super Bowl side during that time period.
In terms of evaluating these two teams here, and we've talked about this again, chinks in the armor for both teams, and not even the things of like the Carolina secondary or Peyton Manning or whatever, but just what you were talking about, the Denver point differential not being congruent with being a number one seed. What I've said about Carolina strength of schedule, these are more big picture things we're looking at here.
Both teams will regress. When we do our show,
mm-hmm.
and we talk, when we preview the next year,
mm-hmm.
you know, wins, losses, will they go up and down? Well, Carolina is a lock. Sorry, Panther fans, you're not going 16-0 next year.
No.
Both of these teams, to me,
mm-hmm.
are locks to not just drop in wins next year, but to probably drop by four.
Yeah, could very well. But this is what I want to ask you.
Okay.
I threw out something at midseason here, my thesis of the league for 2015. And I said, I think that let's say you set the index of the league a number at 50 because of the 50-yard line. So let's just use that in the average year, the talent level, health level, whatever you want to call it, how good a league is in terms of talent top to bottom, in an average year it's 50. I said I thought at midseason this was like a 47 or 48 kind of a year. You look at Carolina, who I wrote off before the year because they lost Kelvin Benjamin. Like, I'm like, how are they going to replace that? I mean, both teams are here despite things like Denver's here full-blown despite their quarterback. We've already said that. I'm just going to say it in those words. Carolina's here despite not having the guy that had been their number one offensive weapon. I mean, Cam Newton, I guess, is your number one offensive
Absolutely.
Weapon. But you know what
Absolutely.
I mean as far as who he
works
with.
I think Kelvin Benjamin's a little overrated, quite frankly.
And he may be. And I noticed that he only caught 50% of his targets the first year. That may bite him the next year. I was looking forward to fading him in fantasy this year. I didn't get the opportunity to. But nevertheless, I look at that. I look at what these teams are here in spite of, and that in your mind and my mind, they're not classic number one seeds. Does this sort of back up my theory of the league that the number one seeds here are here, that it's a 47 or 48 year?
This was not a great year.
That's what I think.
NFL football, I don't think.
Yeah.
Carolina.
Talent pool-wise.
Carolina, okay, they lost Benjamin for the whole year, and they've got the big albatross at the second cornerback spot right now.
Right.
But compared to other teams, the injury bug definitely bit them less. I mean,
sure.
When you look at a team like New England or
right.
Pittsburgh.
Right.
Or, you know, Cincinnati who lost Dalton. Or there's just so many teams. You know, a team like Baltimore, Dallas, who are just completely decimated by injuries,
mm-hmm.
both of them. They're relatively scot-free. And Denver, despite the fact that they lost Peyton Manning, you know, that was really their only key loss during the year, and one could argue that Brock Osweiler was not any kind of significant downgrade during that time where he played.
Right.
So
yeah.
These teams were kind of, you know, able to get here through attrition. You know, they just not through attrition. They just kind of avoided attrition, is what I meant to say.
Sure. So. Well, you know, and the matchups that they got with teams also too. You know, and so we've talked about the passing game. That again, the issue of a very weakened Peyton Manning versus a Carolina secondary that, I mean, even still with the second cornerback slot there, when you look at the rest of it, I think is still above average. So you have that. And then Cam Newton, who's been doing a great job in the playoffs against the Denver secondary that's the best in the league. But you look at it, that Carolina being 24th in passing yards during the regular season, that's not really what they're geared to do. He's shown in the playoffs that they can do it, but he may have to take some more looks than he is used to doing just to kind of keep them honest, because Denver proved last week when they didn't have to respect the rushing game that they could just decimate Brady. That won't be the case because they have to respect the rushing game of both Cam Newton and Jonathan Stewart. Mm. But I'm wondering to what extent Cam Newton may have to go out of his comfort zone against a great secondary just to prove that, you know, we're not just going to try and do the underneath stuff where you can put eight in the box on us.
No, he's going to have to make a big play over the top. There's no doubt about it.
And I wonder if he can do that.
Can he? Yes. Will he? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, he's certainly capable. They've hit some big plays.
They have.
Throughout the year. There's no doubt about it. Interesting thing, Carolina started the year 5-0 against the spread away from home. Mm-hmm. Now, this is obviously not a true road game. It's a neutral field game.
That's right.
They started the year 5-0 against the spread in road games. Failed to cover their last three. Lost to Atlanta, and then they had the two close wins, one over New Orleans, which was, I think, by a field goal,
mm-hmm.
and then the one over the Giants, which I know was a field goal. That was the Odell Beckham, Josh Norman silliness. So this is the first time in a while they've been out of Bank of America Stadium. I know what you want to call it.
You abbreviated that.
Yes. So it'll be interesting to see how they play there. You know, I mean, Denver obviously got both of its games in the playoffs at home.
Right.
And they won certainly a good deal of their road games close during the regular season. But the difference is here, mm-hmm. they're getting quite a bit of points.
They are.
And that, to me, I keep coming back to that. The way I look, there's two things that I'm going to keep harping on
mm-hmm.
in case of, people haven't noticed. I'm sure they have, and it's kind of what ultimately leads me to my final decision here. The record in close games is due to regress for Denver.
Uh-huh.
And the betting percentage.
Right.
Is too lopsided in favor of Carolina.
Okay.
In the end, I think, are we going to give picks now? Because I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've kind of exhausted what I think. I don't really know what else I can say.
I want to ask you what you think about this before I get to your thoughts on this. Because I mentioned before, Denver 17th in the league in terms of rushing yards. But if you go off of the games week 11 and since then, they're actually fourth. Carolina second. So
I see that they had a big 210-yard day against San Diego. Other than that, they did go 179 against New England in the regular season, 170 against Chicago. But, man, their other ones weren't that great.
C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman, though, you look at their yards per carry, and that's a significant thing also, too. I mean, there have been a lot of people that have used yards per carry to bury Trent Richardson, so fair is fair. I think you have to take your hat off on that.
You've got a lot of reasons to bury Trent Richardson.
You've got 4.7 yards per carry on the year for Anderson, and allegedly a horrible year for him. And Ronnie Hillman, 4.2.
The issue with Anderson is holding on to the football.
Oh, yeah, they're fumbling. The fumbling is an issue, but I mean, so I don't want to diminish that. You're right about that, but you look at them defensively, Denver third against the rush, Carolina fourth. My point is, I think this is a great strength-on-strength matchup in the trenches. Do you agree with me on both sides of the ball?
Yes.
Okay.
Which again, leads me to the fact that this is going to be a close game. Low-scoring. A low-scoring, close game. I mentioned earlier that Denver hasn't really driven the ball
mm-hmm.
well for a touchdown. Each game, they did have a relatively long touchdown drive. Their first score in the New England game was an 80-plus yard drive in the first quarter.
It's like their token one that they go on.
And then they had the one off the Pittsburgh fumble in the division round. That was a 13-play, 65-yard drive for the go-ahead score. Other than that, 5 plays, 20 yards for a field goal. 4 plays, 8 yards for a field goal. 11 plays, 62 yards for a field goal. This is all Pittsburgh.
Right.
7 plays, 30 yards for a field goal. And these were like longer field goals, too. 4 plays, 3 yards for a field goal against New England. They had All their scoring drives, except that first one, were set up on short fields.
That's right.
I don't think they're going to win. I just don't think they have enough in the tank. But the defense is going to keep them in it, and I think they're due to lose a close game that's low scoring. I actually like the under most. That's my favorite bet on this game.
I agree.
I wrote on my website that I'm half launching, by the way. I should mention that.
By the way, you know, I want to mention this and where people can find you on Twitter, because I have long known that you are a huge fan. You are a huge enthusiast when it comes to the internet technology of file transfer protocol. You're a big fan of that. So it's no surprise that people can find you at FTP Kyle on Twitter, and they can find your
site
off of that.
It actually stands for Fade the Public, but thank you very much.
Okay.
File transfer protocol. I'm trying to steal a little bit of the search edges. But, yeah, FTP blog, squarespace.com.
Okay.
If you go there, that's it, right? I just launched this thing. That's a way to really debut it, isn't it?
That's right.
FTP blog. Squarespace.com. You can find, I've just got a few articles up there that I wrote through the playoffs. I'm going to be doing a lot more in the offseason, but, and I'll go into greater detail why I think this way. I referenced that because last or 2 weeks ago, I keep saying last week, but it was actually 2 weeks ago for the championship games. I had told you, because I wasn't on, you know, I wasn't on the show.
I had your notes,
with
yes.
your show for the conference championships, but I had said Arizona, but, and I had written on my side, I'm like, yeah, I told Ricky Arizona, I linked to it and everything. But I'm like, you know, the better play on this game is the over. Sometimes the better play is the total on the side. I think the in this case, the better play is on the total with the under.
You said the total is 45 here, I think?
Yes.
Okay.
So I like under. You can still get it, I believe, 45 and a half at some shops, and that's pretty big because 44 and 45 are kind of key numbers when betting totals. Under's the best play in this game.
Yes.
But when you bet an under, you probably like the underdog, and I will here too. I think Denver does not win, but they cover. I say Denver plus six with an under 45 and a half.
Are you concerned at all? You can't be that concerned about the fact that that combo rarely happens in the Super Bowl. You rarely lose but cover. Does that bother you at all?
When was the last time that happened? I believe the Pittsburgh-Arizona game, maybe? It happened?
Well,
remember that one?
There was Pittsburgh-Dallas before that in 96, but I don't know.
No, I think Pittsburgh covered that, or Dallas covered that one. I'd have to go back and look.
It was... I think it was a backdoor for Pittsburgh, but
let me look. Pretty sure that the Pittsburgh Arizona one, the one that Pittsburgh won late,
that might have been,
was a win but no cover. Pittsburgh was kind of a big favorite because remember Arizona like had a point differential of like nothing
right
that year. Let me bring
by
up
the way,
Super
very
Bowl history.
Controversial outcome. I think Santonio Holmes is still juggling that football somewhere.
Oh, will you stop it? let's take a look here. Let's take a look. That is not right. So the last three Super Bowls, by the way, have gone over.
Okay.
That makes me feel good about the...
Due to get an under. Yep.
Yes. The underdog has been hot in Super Bowls, though. Now, last year was a pick 'em, remember.
Yeah, but it's winning outright, though. So
yes. Well, okay, but I'm just talking about covering here in this case. I don't care who wins this game outright, quite frankly. I only care who covers.
But I'm saying, though, the combo of losing but covering doesn't happen very often.
It was
in Super Bowls.
So Arizona was a 7-point dog, lost by 4 in that Super Bowl.
Okay.
Before that, both New England wins over Philly and Carolina, believe it or not, saw the point spread come into play. They were touchdown favorites, and they won by field goals in each of those games.
Okay.
Let me see that Dallas-Pittsburgh game. Yes, there was a backdoor. Dallas was actually a massive 13.5-point
favorite
in that game. Won by 10.
That's right.
And the year before that, there was the infamous push, Green Bay and New England.
Yes, that's right.
Underdogs have really done well in Super Bowls.
Okay.
They have covered, going back to 2002, 4, 7, 10 of the last 13. That does not include last year's pick 'em. So if you just count that as a push, 10-3-1, the run the dog is on. And since 03, I believe it is 6-1 when taking more than 4.5.
Okay.
So the points, you know me, I'm a dog player. I don't love it because I don't love Denver, but I just think that defense is going to keep them in it.
Okay. Well, the line 6 presently had been 3.5. At the open, just to get to some of the gaga that I always put out here for this. Again, I mentioned last week 0-2. You were also 0-2. It was a bad week for us. I'm only 3-6-1 for the playoffs. I haven't hit one since the opening round of the playoffs.
Yeesh.
Here. Still 138, 122, and 6 for the season, 26 and 25 on my big three during the season, 8 and 9 on my lock pick. So I'm still going to be about 52-4 for the season even with this horrible run that I'm on. Even your 0-2 can only bring you down to 57-48-1, I believe. 5-4-1 for the playoffs. So even with the bad round last week, you're still looking good. The other gaga that I always mention, 6:30 kickoff time from Levi's Stadium Sunday night. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call. You're welcome. And you can also, of course, stream this. They've been making a big deal out of it on the CBS Sports app. So you can catch it there as well as on CBS, 6:30 Eastern time. I'm going to go with Carolina. I think it's going to be a field goal, field position game. I think it, you know, punting is going to come into play an awful lot here. And how both teams are positioned as far as moving the ball, because even though Carolina's got a much superior offense at this point, they're also facing the tougher of the two defenses, even though the Panther defense is quite great, as we've been saying. I'm going to say 22-13 Carolina.
That's an odd score.
Well, I'm going to say 5 field goals for Carolina. A lot of field goals getting kicked here, a total of 7 field goals. So if there's a
Scott, that's a prop bet. I know it is. How many total field goals? I think it's 5 or 6, I want to say.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
What, for the over-under?
Yeah,
that,
how many total field goals will be kicked
really?
In this game?
Why would the over-under be that high? Doesn't that seem odd that it would be that high?
Well, when you said, what did you say, 7?
Yeah.
That's obviously very high, but
7
I don't know.
Seems like a lot. Maybe it's just that one team has 5 of them, but
well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if it's 3-3, I don't know. That's not a ton.
It seems like a lot. Well, again, yeah, the prop bet may be getting shaded by everyone considering, the bookmakers considering what kind of a game it's going to be. So I would still say take the over on that, almost regardless of what the over
the
is.
I have the Pittsburgh-Denver box score. Mm-hmm. I happen to have it up right here. There were 8 field goals kicked in that game.
8 of them. Wow, okay. Well, there's going to be more of that. My guess is in a game where it's going to be split a lot of different ways on who could be the MVP, God help us all, America. I think it's going to go to Cam Newton. So more of his show-off, look-at-me
crap.
Oh, that
is such shit.
You know something?
That is,
and that's
Peyton
where,
Manning is the biggest show-off quarterback in this game.
At times like this, I am reminded of the infinite wisdom.
What has he ever done to show off?
He's just always calling attention to himself.
What?
And just whatever happened to the Barry Sanders thing of hold
on. On that corporate whore, that corporate hillbilly, Peyton Manning?
Hand the football to the referee. You know,
chicken parm, you taste so good. Shut up.
Well, you know, when I see Cam Newton's antics.
What antics?
I think to myself.
What antics?
Showboaty kind of look
at me. He
doesn't
showboat.
Do a dance, do a whatever. You know, step and fetch it crap. You know, I think to myself of the infinite wisdom from The Simpsons of the character Helen Lovejoy. Won't someone please think of the children? That's what comes to my mind.
Yeah,
when
well,
I
you
see
mean
that.
Like when he hands the football? Yeah, because that's a terrible thing to do. Typical Republican take.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of his antics, but I do think he'll win MVP in a crowded field here because I don't think it's going to be a standout performance. Statistically, but that's the thing, too, is that the year that he has had has been better than the statistical year that he's had. So I kind of look for more of the same on Sunday. So I see it going that way. 22-13, is that at least in the ballpark? I mean, obviously you're expecting Denver to get under the 6, but, I mean, is that in the ballpark of the total points that you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's going to be – well, I already said there's not going to be more than 45.
That's right.
I think that – it would shock me if the winning side had more than 24. I'll say this, by the way. This does not speak well to what I said earlier about the point spread coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
There have been only 6 times in history, 6 out of 49 Super Bowls, where the straight-up winner did not cover the spread.
That's kind of what I was looking at there. So,
but 3 of them are since 04.
Okay.
So...
very, very interesting. It is a stampede of the money toward Carolina. There's no question about that. But, again, you know, it all depends.
Look at all this great information that just came up on my screen.
What else you find?
Favorites, 33-15 straight up all time.
Okay.
Again, remember last year was a pick 'em. 26-18-2 against the number.
Okay.
So the Super Bowl has gone the way of the favorite. Over-unders, 25-23. There was no over-under posted for the first Super Bowl.
Why wasn't there? What a bunch of slackers.
I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have
How'd they have an actual line and not an over-under? That seems weird. I understand if you don't have both, but...
You know, totals betting probably wasn't very popular, I don't think, back then.
Maybe not. Who knows? But, yeah, so that's going to be my pick. We disagree on the sides for the game here, but we agree on the total. So I'll go ahead and throw that in as an official play
on my
part.
Oh, there you go.
I'll add that to it.
There you go.
I still don't think I risk going under 52-4 even if both of those miss, but we shall see. So it'll be a very, very interesting spectacle. We got Coldplay to look forward to at halftime. Thanks,
Yikes.
NFL. Yeah, exactly.
Yikes.
I'm a little surprised. I thought if they were going to go newer type thing, it might have been Fall Out Boy or somebody. I didn't think Coldplay would have been ahead
of
them. Wouldn't you think Fall Out Boy would be ahead of them on the depth chart?
I wouldn't have Fall Out Boy play halftime on my freaking bar mitzvah, and I'm not even Jewish.
Well, first of all, on personal preference, I'd rather it was Fall Out Boy, but I'm just saying overall. Well, I don't really like Coldplay. Although, you know.
I don't either, but Fall Out Boy is like, there's a term.
The recent
that.
Single, although.
The worst.
Recent single, I'm okay with it. If the entire halftime is like a 20-minute extended play of their recent single, and we don't have to hear any of their back catalog bullcrap, I'll be happy with that. That'll work fine for me. But any other notes for the big game Sunday?
Other than Fall Out Boy stinks, not really.
I think you're a little hard on that, man. The way I look at it, like from the perspective of being like a child of the 80s, I'm a reverse curmudgeon. Like everybody that bitches about music today, you know, we had to listen to all this gobbledygook back in the 80s and walk uphill in 6 foot of snow to school both ways. You know, like, I'm a reverse curmudgeon. Like, today's music is not nearly as horrible as the crap I had to listen to in the 80s that I've since made peace with, by the way. But
there's
good
music today. Fall Out Boy is not among it.
But I'm saying, like, even of the more popular, what's better? The more popular music of today or the more popular music of the 80s? Hands down today. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I think popular music today is awful.
I'm not saying that it's not on the whole.
This is a different
culture club. Madonna, get out of town.
Madonna,
man.
Was tall. Culture club is bad.
Don't even.
Madonna's better than a lot of popular.
The crap
music
I had to listen to in the 80s. My God, anybody bitching about?
Here's the problem.
Music
I
on
don't
the radio
really
today.
You know me.
Mm-hmm.
The radio.
I don't know because I. Like, it's kind of interesting today, and mm-hmm. this is, again, I guess nothing's off limits here.
Off topic.
That's what it is. It's one thing that's so interesting about listening to music today
mm-hmm.
is how you can totally avoid the radio. I can't remember the last time I put terrestrial radio on.
Oh, okay.
There is no, I'm 35 years old.
See, I routinely do in my car.
I don't think there's a single 35-year-old, I'm not single, by the way, I'm married, but a individual 35-year-old man
mm-hmm.
who has less awareness of what's in the top 10. You could play the top 10 songs in America right now. I don't know if I'd know one. Like, my wife actually came home almost in tears from work one time because she mm-hmm. could not participate in some discussion she had in her office about popular music. She blamed it all on me. She's like, it's because of you. You just listen to this. Just put out whatever you want. And I don't know any popular songs anymore.
Do you have Sirius XM or what do you listen to?
I just plug in Pandora and just put on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. The web stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm totally off the web. I have no knowledge. Like, for instance, like this Fall Out Boy song you've mentioned, I've probably never.
I didn't reference that, but the new Coldplay single I'm talking about.
I haven't heard that.
So it's got like some Herb Alpert type horns in there.
I gave up on Coldplay after their like second album.
Oh, don't get me wrong, I hate them on balance. I'm just surprised that nobody's more surprised than me that I like this song. Believe me, I'm not a Coldplay guy. But so we got that to look forward to. As I put it in air quotes,
I always take the big piss break at halftime.
I do, too. And
a few other breaks, maybe. I don't know.
I miss the days when that would get counter-programmed. Where have you gone? In Living Color or MTV Deathmatch? Or, you know what I mean?
Oh, Halftime Heat.
Halftime Heat,
A world title change. Mick Foley with that really overproduced ending.
Yeah, why does nobody do that anymore? Are they that afraid of the NFL?
I don't know.
We will crush you if you do this.
Maybe they will. Maybe they are.
That's horrible. Everybody in the world is a bunch of fraidy cats these days. Well, not us. We break it down on this show without fear, without reservation. We have done so for an entire season. Yet again, I look forward to everything that comes after the season. Buddy, breaking it down with you, starting to look ahead to next year.
I don't know how we're going to do it, this, because
I'll defer to you on that.
I feel that we should just wait, right? Because you know what we usually do is we do two shows between seasons, right? We do one right after the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's kind of a mop-up, and then we'll do one right before.
Right.
I think this is what we should do.
Segmented into many segments, but yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, we do one taping.
Right.
Spoiler
right.
alert. Or, I'm sorry, what is it? Kayfabe alert. Let's do one when the over-unders come out, which is like generally late May.
Okay.
After the draft.
Okay.
Let's just do it. Let's wait till then, and we can just do one. Because what do I always bitch about? I always change my mind some between February and August on a team.
Gotcha.
For no damn good reason, and it always bites me. Miami. Chicago in 2014. But let's just do that. We'll be back and we'll be in May. We can spread that over and then we can spread it over the summer.
There you go. There you go. Programming alert, folks. I guess that's what we'll be doing next with this.
Unless if you don't like that, I guess.
No,
I sort of made that decision for us.
No, well, okay. You know me, man. I roll with it.
We can get rid of those. We can do those Royal Rumbles then before May.
Yeah, that's our latest target date.
Yes,
huh?
Yeah. We can preview the 2017 Royal Rumble.
By the time we're done,
yes.
Absolutely.
Oops.
But thank you, everybody, for tuning in all year long here. It's been our fourth year of going week by week on these. I have greatly enjoyed doing them, and I know that anybody that's been checking them out has been enjoying listening to them. So thanks very much. I'm sure you enjoyed this one as well. And we'll catch up with you again doing another one of these sometime after the Super Bowl and probably about the time when the over-unders come out.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.